Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, March 26th, 2024. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org. If you go to that website and click on the two words that say start here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description and explanation of the primary tool in this work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 19 years now to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's a simple PDF file. Click the link, download it, print it off, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words, Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. If you choose to do that before you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. We hope people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it tends to improve the quality of people's lives the more they actively apply these tools in their lives, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of those to share with us, we would appreciate you doing so by giving us a call at 563-999-3581. Once you call that number and press 1 on your phone, you'll put the little icon of a hand by your phone number. If you do that, it will let me know that you talk. I will be able to turn on the microphone and announce you by your area code, and then we can have a conversation. Alternatively, you can send us an email. If you don't want to call in live or don't have that possibility, you can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org, and or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. That's whyagain.org. And if we get a comment or a question from you or a testimonial, we'll address it on the Internet show. And then, as time allows, send you a notification about what day and time that occurred so you can listen back to the archives for your feedback or input. And we Greatly appreciate whenever anybody gives us feedback or input because it makes it far easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention we have with this work is to be of service, and that's just a whole heck of a lot easier to do when we know how these things are landing for you. So please consider giving us a call or sending us an email and letting us know what's of most use to you in the work we're doing, in the way of mastery we're presenting, and or the other books, and or the worksheet processes that are done on the air, and or the discussions that occur as people are trying to understand and figure out how to more directly and efficiently apply these tools and the dynamics that allow them to be so effective. Today's a Tuesday, so there will be a support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. And all the information you would need to join us is available absolutely free. Joining us is also free, but you can find out about that on mindshiftersacademy.org website. And somebody brought it to my attention that the website looks like, you know, we're still charging people $10 a session. But the basis of that is that it just, I haven't had the time to go back and change the website. But even though it says you can donate, the information's available without needing to donate. It's just a simple Zoom link, plug it in your browser, and away you go. So if you or someone you know you think might be benefit from joining us, please pass that information along to them. We would be grateful. And in the meantime, we have plenty of time for a comment or question about the reading we've been doing in the way of mastery or anything else that's come up in the past 13 plus years of our time here on Mind Shifter Radio. And let us know how we can support you. I mentioned from time to time that there are some books that I listen to on repeat once or twice a year. And included in that list is a book by Anthony DeMello titled Awareness. And every once in a while, somebody else finds that and or posts a message about it. And so I recently saw a post about somebody who also says they listened to that book multiple times. And so I began listening to that again this past couple of days, and I can highly recommend it. It is it's a clean, crisp, sometimes humorous look at what we've been conditioned into and conditioned to believe and conditioned to value in our culture, which is basically the same thing the way of mastery has been asking us to take a look at in this most recent lesson we're reading, lesson 15. And if you take this work as actual work, if you take it to heart, you're not just going to read the book or listen to it being read. You're going to actually question, okay, so what is it that I value so much that I'm spending all of my or a considerable amount of my time, intelligence, money and energy on these thoughts or on these emotions. You know, one part of the book Awareness with Anthony DeMello, it's something that I look at a lot, is how people want to fight and die for their beliefs. And he talks about it very directly, very straightforwardly, how silly it is, because, you know, beliefs are just practiced thoughts. And, you know, he comes at it through the perspective of asking, okay, so who are you? It's one of the deepest spiritual questions or teachings that you can have, is to have somebody help you begin to slow down and actually question, who are you? Are you your name? Are you your thoughts about yourself? Are you the things you've done in the past? Are you the place you were born? Are you the parents that you had? And the more you start really questioning that, the more you realize the power behind saying, I am this or that. And then the dynamic and the power in the dynamic of stepping back to observe, okay, so when I say I am this, who is me deciding that? It is a phenomenal pursuit. It is really worth the effort to slow down and figure out, who is judging you when you judge yourself? What part of you is that which is observing and being judged, and are they separate, and if so, how? It's an absolutely powerful, fruitful exercise to engage in. What's the deal here? When I say I'm an idiot, when I get angry at myself, when I say, oh, I'm depressed, am I really the thing I say I am? Or am I the consciousness that can be aware of this energy of depression or this negative thought pattern? And how often does that label that I say, I am depressed, or I am tired, or I am sorry, or I am sad, or I am grateful, how often does that change? And as often as that changes, does the essence of who or what I am ever change when it changes? This is a wonderful set of exercises to engage in. Just starting to observe. It is well worth the effort and the energy to step into that process of questioning. And what most of these great teachers tell us when we do that is, we're going to understand at new levels how it doesn't really make sense to attack somebody else for our beliefs or their beliefs, or think about fighting and dying for our beliefs, or attacking somebody else for our beliefs, when the essence of who we are is connected to everyone else and everything else. And whether we acknowledge it or not, this is very much the same that we're called to explore, experiment with, understand at deeper levels in the way of mastery. What is it that we... One way it asks the question is, what is it you value? what are you pouring your mind energy into? Because whatever you're pouring your mind energy into, whether it's anger or fear or sadness or hurt or joy or appreciation or gratitude, that is truly in that moment what you're valuing. And I've run into this exploration from a number of different, whether it's a sales training or a spiritual training, where people say, let's take a look at what you really value. And the bottom line on when you ask somebody what they value and they give you a list of qualities or a list of objects or a list of activities, and then you ask them to rate, you ask them to rate how much of their time or energy they're spending engaging in that. If it's a thing like a set of drums or a car or, let's say, a video game, and they say, I have tremendous value for my family, or my family is my top priority. And then you ask them, well, how much time are you spending in direct contact with your family or in direct application of your time and energy with the drums or with the video game? And that's the real eye-opener, because so many times when people say, the most important thing to me in my life is X, Y, or Z, and then you stop and ask them to really evaluate how much of their time, intelligence, money, and energy they're actually using, engaging with that person, that place, or that thing, you find out they're not spending that much time or intelligence or money or energy engaging in that thing or with that thing. So you have people who say, family is the most important thing in my life, but they're working 12 hours a day. Or they're working an 8 or 9 hour day in a place that they have to travel to, so that the commute is an hour or two. And so they're away from the family for 10 or 12 hours of the day. And then when they're home, they're not engaged in that loving interaction that they say they value so much. And while some people feel like this is, you know, a trap or a trick, or you're trying to make me feel bad about myself, it's not at all. It's just a really good way to start exploring, what am I doing with my mind energy, which is a creative force? What is it I really value? What is it that I'm really pouring all of my mind energy into? And then if I don't like that, if I'm willing to be honest about it and I don't like it, now I have the option to change it. But if I can't even explore it, honestly, I can't make a change. If I can't see clearly the truth, then I can't make an adjustment. And whether we realize it or not, this is what the Way of Mastery is calling us to in this lesson and several of its lessons, but it really, as it moves into the Way of Transformation, it says, okay, we really have to roll up our sleeves and get down to brass tacks here. This is what we're called to do. Use time differently. Be more deeply, purely honest with ourselves about how we are using our time, our intelligence, our money, and our energy. Because whether we realize it or not, as we choose to spend our time, intelligence, money, and energy in an activity or on some particular activity or engage with other people, that's what we're communicating to ourselves and the rest of the world that is most important to us. So as I've talked about, you know, I've been inundated in the past few weeks with people who have what, you know, could only be described as really good lives. They're not living in a war zone. They're not homeless. They're not starving. They either have plenty of money and they don't have to work, or they have a job and they make enough money to, you know, house themselves and feed themselves, and they have decent health. And yet, much of the of what's coming out of their mouth is a complaint, is a criticism of somebody else, is a complaint about their situation. It's all about the stuff they don't have. And so what they're doing in that moment is they're communicating that what they value is criticism and complaint. What they value is negativity. What they value is the suffering. And all through this book, this Way of Mastery says, your body-mind is just a temporary communication device. And so please pay attention to what you're choosing to communicate. And I get it. I hear it from a lot of people. They don't have any choice. It's just what their mind does. It's just their obsessive thoughts. It's just this. I hear it. And I know it to one degree or another. Some of us have much more success with this than others, but to one degree or another, each of us has the ability to choose the focus of our conscious awareness in each new present moment. So, lesson 15 is titled, Love or Fear, the Choice is Yours. And are you going to choose for fear or are you going to choose for love? Whatever you choose to focus on is what you're communicating to the world that you value. And you can be committed to focusing on every word, every vibration, every thought, every activity that you allow to settle into your mind. Or you can just go along believing the conditioning of your culture that you're a victim and you don't have any choice here and it's all being done to you. And but the invitation in this work is to choose to actively focus on the only energy that can separate you from this bliss state they call the kingdom, from this awareness of your connection to all life in the flow of creation. The only thing that can separate you from that is your choice to focus on fear rather than the energy of love and life that gave rise to you and is flowing through you and gives you the ability to be aware of anything. And where we left off reading in lesson 15 is at the heading of a section that says, Accepting the Resurrection for Yourself. And the text reads, Upon this Easter, or whenever you read this, recognize that you have the power to celebrate and accept your resurrection as the living Christ. And you can do that by seeing beyond the boundaries of death and loss and fear and hurt and anger and projection, and all of the perceptions upon which projection is based. You are the one who has been reborn when you choose to remember only your loving thoughts. So you can literally create a resurrection moment for yourself when you choose to focus on gratitude thoughts, to focus on loving thoughts, to choose to focus on your awareness of your connection to your Creator. The text goes on. What then is the veil that seems to make it so difficult? Well, it can only be this, that you have accepted into your mind at some level that the world you see is real, and that it holds a power to dictate to you whether you will feel peace or disturbance, and whether you will feel love or judgment. The only thing that can separate you from your awareness of your connection to all of life and the flow of energy and what they call the kingdom and the bliss state and heaven, whatever you want to call it, the only thing that can separate you from your awareness of all of that connection is that you accept it into your mind at some level, that the world you see outside of you is real, and that it holds the power to dictate to you how you're going to feel, whether you're going to feel peace or disturbance, whether you're going to feel love or judgment. And this teaching says it over and over again, so here it's going to say it again. This is always an illusion. The outside events in your life do not have the power to make you choose for fear. You've been trained into it. You've accepted it. You're playing with it. You're experimenting with it. And yet, in any moment when you decide enough is enough, I don't like how this feels, I think I'll choose again. I'll choose for love. It's done in that moment. It might come back because it's been conditioned so strongly for so many years. It might flood back into you to choose for fear. And yet in the next moment, you can choose again. So the text goes on and asks, my question for you is, would you be willing to surrender your illusions in order to remember the peace of all creation? The question is whether or not you will accept the atonement for yourself, the awareness of the fact that everything is connected, the at-one-ment for yourself. Will you accept the resurrection for yourself? And again, the resurrection here is simply defined as choosing to value and then teach only your loving thoughts. Will you be determined to walk this earth as one who has arisen? What does that mean in a practical sense? It means that instead of seeing somebody who's doing something that you think is idiotic, instead of calling them an idiot, you see them as a being of brilliance and light, just like you. And you see the activity that they're doing as something that's either a cry for help and healing or an extension of the creative force of love itself. What does that mean? It means that you've chosen to awaken from the uselessness of the idea of separation. You've chosen to awaken from the uselessness of the idea of victimhood. You've chosen to awaken from the idea of the uselessness of weakness. And you've chosen to accept the empowerment of becoming responsible for this dimension of creation, the one that you're creating by where you focus your conscious awareness in each moment. It means the empowerment of deciding to walk the earth as an arisen Christ. You have chosen to take advantage of an historical event that did occur in time, parentheses, for if it did not, someone has managed to fool me, close parentheses, and to assimilate it as a symbol of your own life. For you have well been crucified by your own thoughts, and by your own thoughts you have brought your persecutors to you. And you have those persecutors who have nailed you upon the cross a million times so that you could be confronted with the opportunity to look on out upon a lovely world by seeing it only through the eyes of love. This is our opportunity. Christian Sundberg in his book says, the only reason we come into a physical experience from our soul space, our non-physical being. The only reason to do that is to get better and better at choosing for love, being the presence of love, extending love in more and more difficult, what he calls constraint sets or situations. It's like going into a gym to lift weights. We don't start with the heaviest weight. We start with the light ones. We build up. We stress the muscles. They get sore. We give them a rest. We come back. Over time, the muscles grow. They get stronger by lifting heavier and heavier weights. So what this book is saying is just like what Christian Sundberg is saying. You set up a situation with your own thoughts that crucifies you, creates your pain, your suffering, etc., amplifies it, and then brings your persecutors to you, and then they attack you or judge you or create an even more difficult situation for you to experience so that you can be confronted with the opportunity to look out upon the world and see only through loving eyes and see only this is a wonderful experience. I can extend love in this experience. I don't have to take the bait and jump into fear or anger or bitterness or resentment or the thoughts that I've been betrayed. As is talked about several times in these lessons, I can look at this situation once I'm in the process of transforming my experience of life, and I can look at things that used to trigger me to think, oh my gosh, this is terrible, this is horrible, this is no good, this is very bad. This is the worst possible thing that could happen to me. And we've all had those, but I can look at those and think, wow, this is an excellent opportunity to extend love. What a joy, what a blessing it is to be alive right now, to have this opportunity to bring, as the Way of Mastery says in some other places, to bring new energy or new presence to energies that once, quote, defeated me, close quotes. I get to be in a situation that I used to run away from or that I used to choose rage over or that I used to get defensive about or that I used to feel I was a victim in these situations, and I get to presence love, extend love, teach love by sharing only my loving thoughts. The text goes on here and says, so think then for a moment and imagine that you actually are nailed upon a cross. You're stuck between the vertical axis of eternity and the horizontal axis of time and the body. Imagine that you lift up your head upon which you have placed a crown of thorns, all of the pain and suffering that you're experiencing because of what you're doing with your mind energy. And what does the cross of the crown of thorns represent? It represents the field of the mind as it operates and expresses through the body and through the brain. Woe is me. I'm a victim. This sucks. This is terrible. I don't deserve this. The more time and energy I pour into those thoughts, the more I suffer. Those thorns represent your fearful thoughts. They represent your judgmental thoughts. They represent your limited thoughts that press and poke upon your own energy field, and they give you quite a cosmic headache, and they draw blood. That is, it releases the life force from you. It releases the power from you. It drains down your own auric field. You dissipate yourself. Much like a balloon with a slow leak dissipates the power that makes it a balloon. When you choose to pour your mind energy into anything other than loving thoughts, you're draining your own life force. You're actually just like air seeping out of a balloon. You're actually choosing to diminish your energy, your available energy. The text goes on and says, quote, a crown of thorns, close quotes, symbolizes the effect of the thoughts you insist upon whenever you rest in judgment, anger, hurt, or fear. That is, whenever you choose to deny the truth of life in every moment, which is love, which is the creative energy expressing. And the nails, it goes on to say, the nails merely represent that which would hold you back and hold you stuck in a dimension, the horizontal dimension of the body and of time. That which would nail your feet to the world. Down to earth, they call it. And yet above you, the crown of your head is open heavenward. And you are free to receive the love of creation and to choose to value and express only your loving thoughts. You are free to look gently upon everyone and upon every event and seeing only perfect innocence. It's a choice. You're available. It's available for you. We're all free to do it any moment. The text goes on and says, so imagine then that you lift your head and you realize that, quote, the blood is dripping from my brow by my own hand. The crown of thorns was placed upon me by those who came to serve me, to shock me into the remembrance that I have allowed myself at times to have thoughts of negativity, limitation, and fear. Wow, no wonder I've had such a headache, close quotes. And then you look to the left and to the right, and you see your wrists bound to the horizontal plane by a nail, a hard piece of iron, cold and thoughtless. How many times have you bound yourself to the things of time through your own thoughtlessness, your own coldness? You turn down to look at your feet. They're crossed over, resting gently upon a small wooden slab with a nail through them, as though the world were saying, quote, don't you dare try to rise above our level of consciousness. How dare you mirror to us the capital T truth of our being by always being so sickeningly loving, close quotes. The text goes on. The world will seek to nail you down to earth by insisting that you think with it. For remember, always, that the world, not the earth, but the world of human experience, is the attempt to create that which is the opposite of actuality, of reality. Like many who would gather together to take a drug and think that their insanity is the same as the bliss and ecstasy of union with the Creator. And yet at that same moment, when that drug is in their system, they would not dare drive an automobile, and they cannot think a coherent thought. Some don't even remember who they are or where they are. So now you turn your eyes from the roar and the din of the world. You see the soldiers, you see your persecutors, totally unconscious, totally conformed to the authority of the world. So that they've donned the armor, the headphones, headpieces, rather, the footwear, and they carry the spears of a god made as a substitute for love. You look out upon the fearful crowd. You see some friends, and they still see your soul. They see your Christ-mindedness, and they continue to love you. Yet even they are veiled by their belief that death and loss are possible. So in that respect, you are completely alone. No one is going to save you. No one is going to rescue you. It is between you and your Creator. This is a decision that you must make, to be determined to choose only what is real, regardless of what the eyes seem to show you and what every mind around you seems to believe, even those who profess belief in your message of love. For they look upon the body, and all of a sudden an old belief takes hold of them. They believe instantaneously that the body is real. After all, look at it. It's nailed to a cross. This is really a limitation. This proves what the world thinks is true. And so you must lift your eyes from the world that you think you see and choose to accept reality. Quote, Father, into thy hands I commend my spirit, close quotes. This is nothing more than the choice for sanity in the midst of all conditions. This is the choice for what is eternal in the field of what is temporal. This is the choice for what is unlimited in the field of what seems to be a limitation. This is the choice for sanity in the field of what seems to be pervaded by insanity. This is the choice to remember only thoughts born in love. And then your eyes look down again, and something has changed. Now you are at peace. You recognize that you are above the world, you are above the crowd, and a gentle sweetness begins to pervade your entire beingness. All pain and suffering is forgotten. The nails can hold you no longer. The world cannot keep you down in its insanity. The eyes of the body close, and as they close, the world they had shown you recedes, and the actual world appears. And you rest in the perfect remembrance that you are one with your Creator. Your attention drifts away from insanity. Yet, you are quite aware that you can still see your friends. You see the soldiers. You see the tears and the tumult. You see some who are merely standing quietly, and you bless them and release them to have whatever perceptions they would choose. For you have come to love yourself so much that you will accept only what is real. It is finished. The resurrection now begins. Easter is your birthday. Easter is a time to celebrate that the crown of thorns has been removed because you have chosen to think only loving thoughts, and that you have remembered the power given unto you through which you transcend the awful, dreaded, and suffering-filled experience born of fear. For in capital L love, there is only peace. In capital L love, there is only infinitude of spirit. In capital L love is the Christ restored to your consciousness. In capital L love, you are returned. Easter is for you, not for me. Therefore, set aside your images and your practices of me. Make no pilgrimages to me. Make a pilgrimage to the heart of your capital S self by looking upon all that you see this day and seeing its beauty, its harmlessness, and by knowing that you are looking out through the eyes of the arisen Christ. You are that one who, with me, has overcome the world. What can there be left to do but to celebrate with your brothers and sisters? What can there be left to do but to laugh, to sing, to play, and to remember in quiet devotion the love your Creator has always had for you. You can choose only between love and fear. In love, you are resurrected. In fear, you are crucified. What then will be your choice in this lesson in which death offers you eternal life? Would you ask that you could read this lesson many times? We would ask that you would read this lesson many times. For here alone do you find the magic doorway set before you, always before you. The only choice that matters is before you now, as it is always. Choose for love or choose for fear. Choose for resurrection or choose for crucifixion. Choose for joy or choose for suffering. The choice is always yours. Choose for expansion or smallness. The choice is always yours. And like me on a cross so long ago, no one can make the decision for you. No one causes your perceptions. Your perceptions flow from your choice for either crucifixion or resurrection. I know where I would choose to have you join me. Know then that I have great love for you always in the ways that you will allow and to the depth that you will accept. This love is being extended to you always as much as you will allow to any depth you will accept. The invitation then is for you to choose with me and you are free. Peace then be upon you, dear friends, peace to the only begotten of the Creator, the resurrected Christ, and or peace to the crucified body and the egoic mind. Whatever you choose is okay. It is your choice. Amen. That brings us to the end of Lesson 15. Interestingly, this year as we're doing it, it's right near the time of what they would call Easter in the Christian Catholic traditions. So it's interesting that it's falling that way. This wasn't planned, but this, of course, is a very different idea about resurrection and your choice for living your life. In this work, it's not about any religious belief. It's about a simple choice between love and fear. It's about a simple choice about which of the many thoughts that are going to be bouncing around in our heads throughout the day are we going to choose to value enough to share with others? Are we going to value our thoughts of anger, resentment, bitterness, defensiveness, victimhood, loss, or are we going to value only our thoughts of love? Consider giving us a call and pressing 1 on your phone. How is this landing for you? Does it seem blasphemous to talk about Easter and resurrection in this way, especially right around the time that there are some people in religious groups that are going to be celebrating Easter this coming Sunday? Or is it making sense to you that you have a choice? Is it exciting and liberating to consider that you are a creator and you are actively creating your experience of life in each new present moment? And does a teaching like this help you at all wake up to what you might do to use your mind energy, to use the interpretations that you apply to life events moment to moment to choose differently, to generate more appreciation, more gratitude, more compassion. I have, as I mentioned in the part of the intro, I've long struggled with the idea that people want to fight and die for their beliefs and or their religion and or any other pattern of thought that they've accepted as being ultra important or of the utmost importance in their life, at the same time recognizing that those thoughts change sometimes moment to moment, and certainly week to week, month to month, year to year. I could never really wrap my mind around the idea that, or the practice of people deciding they want to fight and die for their beliefs, when we recognize that beliefs are just really well-practiced, high-momentum thoughts. And thoughts change all the time. And do we want to restructure our lives for things that come and go when the great teachings ask us to just really slow down and focus in on what's our true nature? What is that Gangaji would call us to just slow down and sit with our thoughts and watch how they move and change and flow, and stay and do that over and over and over again until eventually what happens if you sit and you watch everything that comes and goes? Gangaji says, eventually what happens is you get introduced to that which never changes. That's you. That's your true nature. That's your essence. That's what we were talking about earlier when we said, sit with the question, who are you? What are you? Well, the more you are willing to sit with this, just watching that which changes, Gangaji says, you will eventually get introduced to that which never changes. And that is who and what you truly are. That is what, even if you don't want to admit that that's you, that's what you're connected to. You've never been disconnected from your creator, from your source. It's not possible. It's not desirable. It isn't anything to ever worry about or generate fear about. It's essentially the opposite of what religions teach us. So, as Michael Rice likes to talk about, Jesus is quoted often as saying, fear not, fear not, fear not. So, dismantle your fears and choose for love. That's what's being encouraged, and that's what we're invited to in this lesson. In a lot of lessons, but again, very explicitly in this lesson. Area code 541, you're in the air.
Yes, good morning, Dr. Tim. This is Celinda.
Hello.
I'm so glad that I checked in fairly early this morning and got almost all of what you were talking about. And I confirm the value and the preciousness of this reading for me, since I became the pacifist that I mentioned before, 60 years ago. And I took Yeshua off the cross in 1978, which is 46 years ago, and it's taking me all this time by the grace of my commitment to the gospel that I had at that time, and that I, the gospel that I am receiving at this time, to come into a more fullness of the meaning of what you were reading today. And thank you for all of it.
You're welcome. You're welcome. So, as the world turns, do you normally celebrate Easter?
No.
Okay. So this work is inviting you to switch that up this year and celebrate Easter as your resurrection.
Sweet. My family celebrates Easter in the traditional way. And I feel free, if I am in a church, to take communion, if I am there, because I am aware of the oneness of us all. I don't run up to the front and say, you are the Christ, but I am very happy to take communion in celebration of my connection to my community, which is all that is, as I'm coming to really realize it as my reality, step by step, day by day, moment by moment. And I appreciate, I'm more and more appreciating my difficulties just because I don't like the wrapping on the gift doesn't mean I have to throw the gift away. I can embrace it on whatever level I am going.
Well, and I don't quite know what you mean, but I'm interpreting your words to mean whatever life brings is the gift, and there's going to be a lesson contained in whatever life brings me, and I don't need to throw it away. Kay Finley would say, if I reject the event, I reject the learning.
Right.
And only when I move into allowance do I allow the gift of the lesson to be accepted by me.
And I'm even moving into the allowance of my resistance, and I'm practicing the okay response that you taught me. Okay. And the image of a creator, a life force, a love force that chuckles in my innocence as it perceives it, because it knows that I have to build the brain cells. And then those brain cells get to percolate down into my heart cells, and then my heart cells get to percolate down into my body cells, and I become the expression, the extension of who I am as I reach out to my world in transformation, in transcendence, and whatever that means, because I'm still experiencing the journey, the voyage. I love it.
All right. Well, congratulations on that, and good luck doing that this Easter season. Thank you for the comment. I'll mute you so you can listen to the second hour if you so choose. I'll remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. Welcome, Jeannie Rice.
Thank you, Dr. Tim. Appreciate it.
You're welcome and deserving. Have a wonderful show.
Thanks. Welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mindshifters Radio. And today is Tuesday, and it's March the 26th, 2024. And our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And press 1, and that puts you in the queue to talk to us. And we would love to hear your comments and questions, because that makes this your show. We'll give Michael a moment to dial in here, and I'll just say I'm working on creating, if you go to whyagain.org/mindshifters, we actually have a more detailed description of what a mind shifter is and how to use a mind shifter. And a lot of people have, asked, okay, what do I do with these? And it seems like more and more people are using the mind shifters as well as the forgiveness worksheets. So I'm finishing that up right now. So within about a minute after Michael takes over the talking. We'll have that page complete, and you'll be able to go out there and pick that up easily. And then there's also you can click to download the PDF of it. So trying to make some of the pages more usable. And so if you find something that you feel like it should be a little bit different, drop me a line at Jeannie, J-E-A-N-I-E, at whyagain.org, and let me know. And I'll see what I can do to take care of it. I was looking while I'm waiting on Michael to dial in. I think we've answered all of the emails that have come through. Let me just double check real quick. Yeah, I don't have any more out there. So that's another way that if you're not able to call in during the live show and you're just listening to the archive, you can always drop me a line at jeannie@whyagain.org. and ask your question, and we will address it. And then I'll send you back an email and let you know what day we addressed it. And I'll actually send you a link to that day's show so that you can click it and download it. And I've been telling people, you know, like if you scroll into about 20 minutes of the second hour, you'll pick up where we talked about your question. So I kind of give you a direct if you don't want to listen to the whole two-hour show. Anyway, that's what's going on here. It's raining off and on. Michael actually went to take some things to the car, and as soon as he opened the door, it downpoured. So he had to put everything down and said, okay, I'll wait. But we can use the rain. Yesterday we planted our, it looked like the freeze is over now, so we planted our peach tree and two grapevines and put up some netting over the grapevines so the birds will let them alone. And anyway, Michael has now joined us, so I'm just going to say welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and welcome, everybody. Delighted that you're here. We get to move forward on the next level. And I've got someone who just texted me a question, or at least I just found the question that they texted me. So I'm going to suggest they call into the show and share that question. Lines are open. Okay. Excuse me for completing that. It was just something just popped in as I opened my phone. And delighted that you're here, that we're going to move the conversation about the first century Aramaic language and its understanding forward. And one of the things that has been reinforced for me recently in conversations with a number of different people is just how important it is. And one person was saying, wow, I watched this, the Why Is This Happening to Me Again workshop, and, you know, I'm realizing that I've built the brain cells and now it means so much. And other people have listened to it and they go, so what? And that's true. The whole process is one of building the brain cells. And yes, you'll hear me say the same thing over and over and over and over. However, what we're looking to do, one, is to facilitate the undoing of the false. And until the brain cells that represent truth are strong enough, the false is going to run the show. So an important part of the process is weakening, forgiving the energetic patterns that form realities from carbon-based memory, to interrupt those, to literally, on an energetic level, on a physics level, to de-energize those patterns of thought disorders, and to replace them with what are highly complex, although in the last analysis pretty simple, but ultimately for the mind to be able to produce a reality based in the truth of how life actually works, how the actuality works, is a monumental task and a monumental feat. And, you know, if you went back over the last 14 years of radio shows from day one, and were to listen to every hour 5 days a week for 14 years, there'd be some ideas you'd hear me repeat probably 300 times. But what you'll notice is that each time I repeated it, it was in a different context. It was connected in a different way to something. And when you realize that the way that the human mind formulates its behaviors and how it's going to do certain behaviors is literally a process of generations and generations and generations and generations of building brain cells, out of those brain cells forming realities, realities prompting behaviors, doing behaviors. And when those behaviors were experienced to reduce stress, then even if the reduction of stress was only temporary, then they're the behaviors that will tend to take hold and take over. Now, that process is taken literally in your mind, in my mind, in order for you to do anything. Something as simple as pick up a glass of water. It's taken thousands of generations for each child that comes into the world to be able to build the brain cells to do something that, you know, maybe took humans 500 years to learn to do. And now, because it's inexperience, when I say inexperience, it's part of our experiential energetic structure. When that's triggered into activity, it takes over. I was saying to one young lady this morning, you know, that one of my early mentors used to like to say that 100 million, million people live and die every century and never even know they've lived. I.e., oh, they walked, they talked, they did behaviors, they did all sorts of things. Some things that even appeared intelligent. But all they were doing was playing out the learning of carbon-based memory, which means they never woke up beyond their own minds. Remember, carbon-based memory, that literally as an energy system, every energy that you experience is stored holographically in every cell. When I talk about building brain cells, I'm not talking about building new physical structure. I'm talking about building information into the structure that you already have, information that is energetically stored in every cell in the structure, including the sperm and the egg. So where you'd conceive a child tomorrow, that child would have in its structure literally every thought you've ever thought, every feeling you've ever felt, every reality you've ever engaged in. And that's just part of the growth process. And so any behavior that we happen to do, and you think about it, you know, we've all known someone or heard of someone who, let's say, mom got pregnant with a child and dad was killed before the child was born. And the child, 20 years later, people who knew dad watched the child behave, and they're like, oh, my God, he's like the spitting image of his father. Look at that. He even holds his chin the same way his father did when he became defiant. Look at that. He even moves his arms just the same way. That's just like his father. He never had any interaction with his father. How does he replicate those things? Well, everything's energetically stored in every structure, every cell in our structure. And if we never rise above what's stored in our structure and all that's happening is playing out what's in our structure, then we've never lived. We are designed as human beings not to replicate, not to just play out what's in there from the past, not to do what dad did or mom did or great-grandpa did, but rather we're designed to have the ability to originate, to bring in something new. And that takes a higher set of faculties than what we call the mind ever even considered having. So if we never go beyond that mental level and replicating whatever's in there, though it might be fun and it might be exciting and it might be, again, be really look smart, all it is playing out what's in the structure. When one chooses, the whole essence of this work is to choose to become conscious, to choose to pick a pathway in life, a way that I choose to function a code of behavior, code of ethics, we call it a personal code, that I choose, not one I inherited from my ancestors, but an actual personal code that's in harmony with the truth of who we are. And when I do that, that means there's probably going to be a lot out of the generations that's going to have to be undone or forgiven, a lot that's going to need to be removed. And that will be literally a lifetime of work. And then to replace those things that otherwise would have been run by the automatic decision system, so it would have just replicated what dad or granddad or whatever did, is to originate something new. No, I choose not to respond out of hostility. Well, how do I choose not to respond out of hostility when somebody does this and bang, there's that hostility? Well, here's how you do it. You apply forgiveness to the responses from your replicant mind until you've removed that response. And then, or you've at least literally on an energetic level weakened it sufficiently that you can override it. And ultimately, that you can forgive it fully so that it just isn't even there. So karma-based memory, if you walked into the chemist shop and said, hey, break this body-mind unit down for me, please, to chemistry. Tell me what it's made of. They'll tell you that its prime element is carbon. A carbon atom has 6 electrons, 6 protons, 6 neutrons, 666. You might remember that number. Is it possible they understood that we could be run by carbon-based memory, which would in many cases go against what the higher mind, the mind based in love, would do? The mind in each human that we all have access to directly, our own personal Christ mind. The word Christ in Aramaic is not a person's name. It's not a last name. It's the name of an office. So that mind, when you inhabit that mind, is called the Christ mind. And then, of course, there's the Antichrist. What is that? That's what's in carbon-based memory that goes against that guidance that comes from love in you. And what's the number of that and that which goes against living as a human being out of the mind of love in you? It's the Antichrist, 666, carbon-based memory. So forgiveness is applied to what's in carbon-based memory to remove what never belonged, thoughts, feelings, emotions, energetic patterns, and to then instill, according to one's own choices, what one is ready to live out of. So that's what we're here to do. That's the work of healing. So, Miss Jean, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anything happening in the chat room?
It is all quiet.
Okay. Is Jamuna on by any chance?
No, she's not. Oh, Celinda just raised her hand there. 541, you're on the air.
Okay.
Hello, am I the only 541 available now?
You're it. You're with us. How are you, young lady?
I am fine, thank you.
Good. How can we support you today? What's your question about?
Well, I have a question to ask Jeannie and a question to ask you, actually a couple of questions. One question and a comment. I appreciate your talking about why you're repeating things over and over and over, because I've had comments that, oh, he just says the same thing over and over. And I said, yeah, mm-hmm. I'm building. That reminds me of Bruce Lipton's, I think it was the introduction to a very short, I'm not sure if it's the right one, but there was an introduction that he gave right in the beginning and of this particular YouTube video. And he said in there are three ways we can learn. We can learn through energy medicine, you know, energy work. We can learn through self-hypnosis or other hypnosis, or we can learn by repetition. And repetition went bingo for me, because
that's what it takes.
Yep, the repetition, that's what we learn. That's what Dr. Tim was talking about, or you were just talking about, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Just talking about the continual repetition that, you know, no matter how conscious you're trying to be, some of that stuff gets through, and then we have to do our cleanup work. Yep.
Yeah.
And,
so you have a question
the
for
other,
us.
Yes, I have a question for you and a question for Jeannie, a separate one. I remember you in the Aramaic Gospel with Dale Allen Hoffman, I believe he mentioned something about when the Greeks retranslated the Jewish scriptures, the Old Testament, and their holy works, that they threw out four. There were four, and they threw out three and only left the kindergarten version. Do you remember that?
Not particularly, no.
In your Aramaicism. I was just wondering if those other three versions are still floating around somewhere or if they're lost. And I kind of what I just thought about out of curiosity, not that I'm going to go chase after them, but what I thought about out of curiosity is that I wonder if the Kabbalic mystical system of Judaism might still have at least pieces of those that were lost.
Not my field. So I don't have an answer for that question.
I have a Jewish friend who has studied Kabbalism or Kabbalism. I don't know where the accent is.
Yeah.
For many, many years. I can ask her just out of curiosity.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
awesome.
And my question for Jeannie is, since you all do have quite a bit of experience with the 12-step program, if Jeannie has run across a woman's way through the 12 steps, and let me get the author's name, if I can find the book. I can't find it. It's somebody Covington. Oh, here it is. Let me find it. Stephanie F. Covington. Because it is the one 12-step book that I use now.
I'm not familiar with it, but I did just pull it up on the website, on the internet.
Good, perfect, because that has a particularly feminine viewpoint about the 12 steps, their challenges, their difficulties with the languaging. And also what I like about it is it's inclusive, that it doesn't just focus on one 12-step program like AA or Al-Anon or NA or any of those, OA. It just shows individual life experiences by various women who have gone through 12-step programs. And I thought that perhaps you would find that very, very helpful in your own healing work that you're doing for people, you know. Yeah. I just, it's a special book.
Okay.
Thank you. Just a recommendation.
Michael, you're talking, but you must be muted.
Thanks, Sudie. Yeah, I was just saying thank you.
And
holding
you
in a blessing.
And I hold you in a
blessing. All right,
lady.
Have a blessed one.
Bye-bye.
All right. Take care. Bye-bye. So, Ms. Jeannie, before I move into the next step, do we have anybody in the phone queue with a hand up or anyone in the chat room?
Oh, now I'm muted.
Yes, you were.
No, it's all quiet.
Cool. All right. Well, let's move into, we've talked about, we went through the. Okay, great. Let's say hello.
Ms. Susan, 610, you're on the air.
Hey, friends.
Welcome to your heart.
Howdy. Hello.
Howdy.
Well, I think I know what you're going to say, but I want to ask you this anyway, Michael. and Jeannie too. Do you have to like a situation or like a person in order to hold a space of love?
I would say no, but Michael might say something different.
Thank you.
No, I'm right. I'm right with you. No relationship.
Okay.
The place where we're most, my offering would be the place where we're most deeply called to hold a space of love, which means that in this situation, I'm going to keep my human life, love present in my mind and body, whatever's moving in my mind or body and whatever's moving in the world. The place that it's most important to learn to do that is a place where I absolutely detest what's happening in the world or in myself.
Good, Michael. Yay. Okay. Well, that's
so
wonderful.
Then no relationship to liking or not liking it. It's they're the places
okay.
where it's like the gymnasium. You know, who likes going to the gym and work all those muscles and sweat? Well, there are some people who do. I never particularly enjoyed it. But,
mm-hmm.
you know, if you want to become the world weightlifting championship, you got to go into the gym and you got to work out and you got to sweat and you got to bleed. And, you know, all that has to happen. It's all part of the process.
That's so good. I've got to be careful now because I feel as if you've given me permission to not like somebody that I already don't like. And so, but you're, what
and the
you're
only requirement
is,
of the law. The only requirement of the law is that you keep love conscious, active, and present in you in interaction with them. In order, and the law
kindness,
meaning how it works to be a human being in order to stay human.
Right. Okay. So this is a little tangent. It's the same sort of question, but you often talk about premature enlightenment, or you have another word for it.
Premature positive thinking. Premature positive thinking.
Big challenge. And I've been thinking about how wonderful it would be to be able to feel happiness, to feel joy, to feel bliss, to realize in my gut that we are all one. And yet when somebody says, after all, we're all one, and with one swipe of the back of the hand, my whole human situation has been blown off the table. I'm not there yet. And so if somebody says that, I feel as if I've got to, I got to make a fast retreat because I'm so deeply lacking in experiencing that. But I found a fantastic quote, which I want to read. I'm reading this excellent book called The Lost Art of Dying by a medical doctor and also a very religious woman in her own creative way. She's not dogmatic or anything.
Right.
Her name is L.S. Dugdale, D-U-G-D-A-L-E. And if you ever felt like reading that, it's such a downer of a title, The Lost Art of Dying, and yet it reads like a novel, and she brings up the most amazing issues because she's witnessed lots and lots of death. In her
sounds practice. Like an inspiration.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. She talks about a poet named Christian Wiman, and I'm quoting now from the book. Wiman characterizes himself in his earlier years as an ambivalent atheist who struggled with an inchoate loneliness and endless anxieties. But at some point, he found faith. That's in quotes, he found faith, which he says is fundamentally different from religion. Although now a church regular, Wiman remains ambivalent about religion, and I could add, I am the same. I'm observing Holy Week in my best way, and I love so much about it, but I remain ambivalent. Anyway, I continue. Although now a church regular, Wyman remains ambivalent about religion, its institutions, and as he says, the whole goddamn shebang. But he cannot stop himself from believing. He writes, and now this is him quoting, him speaking, "One doesn't follow God in hope of happiness, but because one senses a truth that renders ordinary contentment irrelevant." That's a tough sentence. I'm going to read it again, and I had to read it twice myself. "One doesn't follow God in hope of happiness, but because one senses a truth that renders ordinary contentment irrelevant. There are some hungers that only an endless commitment to emptiness can feed." That's like Dr. Tim reading The Way of Knowing and saying, we know nothing and you need do nothing. So anyway, again, that's
powerful.
"There are some hungers that only an endless commitment to emptiness can feed, and the only true antidote to the plague of modern despair is an absolute and perhaps even annihilating awe." And then he quotes Abraham Joshua Heschel, this wonderful Jewish mystic, who says, "I asked for wonders instead of happiness, Lord, and you gave them to me." This, reading this, that he chooses the annihilating awe as his connection point with the universe and with God and with all that he doesn't know. It's a feeling I can do. I do it a lot. And so I feel as if I just found a way to participate in what other people can call enlightenment or bliss or even happiness or even contentment. I can feel awe, and I bet you do too. Even though you get maybe disgusted about the way things are going, the awe is there. And I just couldn't stand it. I had to quote that to you. Over and out. That's it.
Sounds right on track to me. I'm with you 100%. And basically, what needs to be annihilated? Everything in us that does not come from love. Atheism comes from not love. Atheism comes from separation from love and recognizing the words love and God are equal. They are one and the same. Love, God, truth are all describing the same thing. And we have conceptions in churchianity of what God is, and it allows certain, let's say, political minds to say, oh, those horrible people coming across the border, you know, those people who... We allowed American corporations to destroy their culture, and now we have drugs, and they're running from it all. That allows one to diss and call those people vermin who are poisoning the blood of America. You know, that's the self that needs to be annihilated in every one of us. I mean, that's an extreme example. But, you know, whatever it is that can resonate anything based in hostility or fear in me is my work, and what I cannot hold to that space of love for diminishes me. When I free myself of that, that diminishment is gone. Now my take is we would get to experience our human lives, and that means a direct experience. Now, if you look at that one beatitude, we'll comprehend the Creator, the invisible source of creation. And to me, that's the objective of, you know, every effort, you know, 32,000 sects of Christianity, let alone Jainism and Buddhism and, you know, every other ism going Muslim. Every one of them is just trying to describe the same thing. And the mind that is unresolved in its rage and its punishment and its hurt and its power person dynamic makes up a religion that's based in punishment. Person who had rejection from their power person makes up a religion. Oh, this is how we get to God, by, you know, rejecting those people who are less than we, and the game goes on. And so I'm with them. I think that's a powerful way to say it. Annihilating. And that's,
I love it.
To me, would
and
be
I,
another word
I
for forgiveness.
That's great. I love that you connected. The annihilating awe is like that. It takes everything away, but being blown away. You are an observer of something you cannot comprehend at all, but you have this incredible appreciation. I think awe is a kind of appreciation, and that can lead to a lot of stuff, but it's a relief to have a word that helps connect so that I don't have to just feel blown off the table for, with these unattainable other ideals, like, after all, we're all connected. I'm not saying it's false. I'll get there. I'm hoping to get there. But this is just a helpful word.
Well, you know, one of the things we've talked about before, and there's a lot of conversation, there's been a lot of university research done on gratitude. And,
mm-hmm.
you know, how powerful gratitude is, a healing force. And what mm-hmm. I hear you talking about is the next level beyond gratitude, and that is appreciation. Gratitude, to me, sort of portends that, well, something came along that pleased me, and I'm grateful for it. Thank you. I have gratitude for that. But then to go to the next level of appreciation, it's like, wow, we get to have a human life and a creation that is so awesome and so amazing and so incomprehensible. Wow.
That
whole thing to the next level.
Oh, I love it. Because I've always had a hard time practicing gratitude. I'll make my lists and everything, but it's like banging against a piece of wood. Somehow the emotions don't come. I can intellectually appreciate that I have food, but when I say that, I'm talking about a lot of people who don't have food. Very hard to keep one side of it going and not being, but odd, yeah, it just absolutely transcends that. That is great. Thank you, Michael. Woo. Yeah.
And then, of course, forgiving in oneself the grief, the pain, the sadness, the fear, the loss, the vengeance, the hatred, and what have you, for the suffering that's in the world, takes one a step closer to being a healing, a healer of the suffering that's in the world.
Michael, could you just say that whole thing again? It went in and
yes.
It didn't compute.
Yes. So when I hear you talk about, I think about the gratitude I have for food, and then I think about the people who don't have food. So
yeah.
In my mind, let's remember the filing system of the mind. In my mind on food, well, there's delicious, wonderful, I love it, isn't this great? Thank you, God. The other side of the equation is I know that there are people who are starving to death. I know there are children who are dying. I know there is suffering. I know there is pain. I know there is deprivation in the world.
Mm-hmm.
If that's in me, then it's kind of tough for me to have gratitude. And gratitude only because the foul folder effect is going to pull that other stuff up in me.
Right.
Now, as long as I hold that other energy in me,
mm-hmm.
then energetically, I am a vote for suffering and lack in the world. I energetically, if I hold unresolved energetic patterns in me about lack and pain and suffering, then I am a creator of lack and pain and suffering. Just by the presence of that energy in me and being a creator. So when
okay.
My take would be when I open and I annihilate those things in me, then rather than when I say, thank you for this food, unconsciously empowering at the same time the suffering of those who are starving, when I clean that out of me, then I become an energetic vote for every belly to be full. I become one more creator tipping the scales, the critical mass toward a universe that turns around and says, we have billionaires who can't even think about spending the money they have, and we have people who are starving to death.
Yeah.
And I become the energetic vote for there's enough for everybody to have it all. Then the whole system in just one little small way, by me doing that, reorganizes itself around that creation, where there's enough for everybody to have it all. And when
there's
we can get enough people
there.
Through that gate, say again?
There's a bumpy road there, because when you talked about the billionaires, anger came up in me, and so there you go. I'm off the wagon already. What you're
so now
doing...
annihilate your anger. Annihilate your
yeah.
anger.
Mm-hmm.
And can you be a space of love and compassion for the person who's worked so hard that they've literally accumulated billions and yet are so self-centered that they can't fathom that why should they go and fight politically so they can get more, but rather find a way to, which many have done, distribute it and uplift the world? Can you forgive that? Can you annihilate that in you? Yeah, yeah. Well, that's, you know, that, I mean, that's our generations.
Yeah.
And so, what I cannot hold to the presence of active love for diminishes
mm-hmm.
me.
I get it. Yep. And it's one way in for me would be to say, I have food and I'm grateful for the food. And I'm grateful for the food that it's going to come to these people who need food. I could imagine practicing gratitude with that kind of acknowledgement for the suffering and yet visualizing them getting food rather than being mad at the billionaires who don't share.
Right.
But, you know, you're talking about a lot of wake-up sheets or the equivalent.
Well, and notice, let me draw a parallel that might take it to another level. Notice that one of the things that you shared with us is the anger of your grandson about you folks being billionaires. Not literally, but you having money and him not. Notice that's part of what you're dealing with.
Gosh, that's good. Say more. And I'm bumping up against that wall because it's true. He thinks that since we have it, we should give it to him. And we would in a second if he weren't using weed and alcohol.
Yep. I hear you. But before you bring in the condition of weed and alcohol, just allow yourself to recognize there's a parallel.
Yeah.
Between the energy you pointed to billionaire and the energy that your grandson is pointing at you.
That's
and
good.
As you forgive in you that energy you hold toward the billionaire, then you'll dissolve the energetic pattern that draws your grandson to pointing that energy in him at you. And as you resolve it, that may be the thing that collapses the whole energy structure that he got genetically. Well, there are certain people you're just always supposed to be peeved with.
Certain people you're supposed to what with?
Be peeved with. Angry
peeved.
With.
Peeved. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And so might be bumping up against, when we open this conversation, you might be bumping up against a genetic reality that who knows how many generations it took to develop to hold this, to be able to generate. I mean, let's imagine we have a fly on the wall in the room with the billionaire.
Okay.
And the fly looks at the billionaire filling their senses with everything they could possibly have. Could the fly ever conceive of being angry because there's somebody starving in the world because the billionaire isn't sharing? And I think in a million years we couldn't imagine the fly would generate that kind of reality from within its mind.
Right, right.
So let's go further from the fly. Let's go to a mouse. much higher level of consciousness we could imagine, probably generates whole different levels of realities within its mind if we think of, you know, how this instrument works. So the mouse, could the mouse look and go, look at that, be angry with this guy because he or this gal because they don't share in the world? Probably not. Somewhere between the fly and us humans, somebody built the brain cells for having rage at those who don't share. And the very act of doing that, having rage attached to those that don't share, becomes an energy amplifier for people not sharing. And so energetically, that person who has rage about those who don't share reinforces and strengthens those people who don't share. Because we're in an energy universe. They are an energetic vote that perpetuates that particular state in the world. So when I go inside myself, I face that and I annihilate that. When I go to that all-pervasive love and surrender this rage at and heal this rage, then I become one more vote in an energetic world that creates the inclination for everybody to realize there's enough for everybody to have it all, and we're here to be the presence of love with and for each other.
Wow, that's fantastic. I feel as if I need to write down the steps that would take my mind from that old script to the new one. And man, it's amazing because my family were, you know, hard-working, middle-class, counting every penny, father working very, very hard to support his family, you know, secondhand clothes invented, unlabeled, cans in the kitchen. And Tim's family, who surely somewhere along the line, there were probably people who had to work that hard, but they became wealthy and they could pass their wealth down and they had access to great educations and brilliant people and lots of assistance along the way. And yet we're talking on both sides about people not sharing in various ways. The mindset comes from both lineages.
Right.
And it's really in there.
So now, remember, we live in a resonance universe. So if I hold in me rage about how people are suffering because of this person, how this behavior is disgusting, how, you know, the whole list, when I walk into the room with the billionaire, I walk in as an energy field. And what energetic patterns do I resonate in the billionaire who probably worked, you know, the way you're talking about Kim's family working, the way you're talking about your family working, but made it and never resolved the selfishness gene?
Right.
Perfect. So am I a space that reinforces that in that person? And we could be talking about anything, you know, if we're talking about anything from, you know, the way education works to sexual integrity to anything in the world. If I walk into the room with a particular mindset and through rage and pain reinforce the energy of that mindset, I'm a very powerful vote for that mindset continuing in the world. Much as I hate it, energetically, I've lent my power to it. I'm a creator of it. So am I able to take that back, surrender that to the presence of love in me, soften my chest, soften my throat, soften my neck, soften my feet, soften my legs, and breathe into every part of me that holds that pain and trauma around whatever that situation is. Let the active presence of love flow into that so that all of that melts. And now stand as a space of active present love, supporting fully, wholly, with every aspect of my being, the act of every person in the world waking up and knowing that we are all cells in one body and there's enough for everybody to have it all. I just created a whole different world. And Yeshua says, which we've repeated before, a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. He's not talking about bread. He's talking about any particular outcome in the world. But I can't be a house, a nafsha, as we talked about the other day on the show. I can't be a nafsha divided against itself. Where in my nafsha, in my created essence, being love, I go, yes, love, abundance, everybody's got enough. But if I'm a house divided against my nafsha, and I have a carbon-based memory system that goes poverty, suffering, death, starvation, you know, greed, get, hoard, keep, don't give any away. Now I'm a nafsha divided against myself. And that house can't stand. As Yeshua used the word, whether it was the nafsha of the city or the town or the family or the individual. And so to undo, you know, we've come out of physiologically a world based in survival, and based in survival meant a lack of the awareness of being, of creatorship. I talked to someone the other day that was doing a lot of processing around the loss of money, and this person recounted how a memory at about age 9, mother taking money from him, and then went through right up to where a major corporation failed and went bankrupt and literally took $1 million of retirement funds. But the repeating pattern, like, you know, a dozen times through one's life, if I hold that energy and I refuse to open the veil of my own temple and resolve the underlying mind energy of loss, then every time I think abundance, I resonate what's hiding in my mind, loss. And I become a creator of loss in the world. Even though I'm saying I want everybody to have it all, if I haven't resolved my own loss energies, then I'm a creator of loss, especially in the places where I most detest it, because that's where it gets the most energetic oomph. And breathe. So what do I need to annihilate in myself? I like the way he said that. That's it. It's all of that. That, and when you look at the survival mode that people have lived in, I mean, the starvation, the deprivation, the, you know, centuries of war and insanity. What did each of our genetic systems come up with? And what do we need to face to be freed of it? And the first way, because the denial system is so powerful in people's minds, the first way they get to face it is in their projection on others. They're feeling it, but the picture in their mind, the structure, the reality structure in their mind, the construct of the mind is, see, it's about them. That's why I'm feeling this. No, I'm feeling this because this is what's in me. Am I willing to have that annihilated so that I come from the state of a creator that is literally an expression of conscious, active, present love? What do I need to face? What do I need to breathe into? What part of my structure is this energy locked into that I've yet to resolve?
Which leads me right back to my question of not liking a situation or a person. Because right then, you are nose to nose with the whole shebang, the whole issue. What's needed in me. So, but the implication is that we will end up liking and that's where I'm stuck.
Well, so here would be my alternative to that thinking.
Okay.
First of all, when I say I don't like Bill or Harry or Mary, I'd offer that there is no one in the world that you or I have ever disliked. But we have brain cells for disliking.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can put those brain cells, I can use those brain cells to build a picture of Mary. And Mary walks in the room and I don't like her.
Mm-hmm.
Well, actually what happens is dislike comes up in me and I hook up to my brain's image of Mary. But then Bill comes in and, oh, I think Bill is the greatest thing since sliced bread. So all of a sudden now I have like in me.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all what's inside of me. It doesn't have to do with Bill or Mary. I can take anything, my hate, my fear, my rage, my grief, my joy, my aliveness. I can take anything and put it into my brain's image of someone who shows up. But as long as I'm living in perception, everything that I haven't dealt with, I project into my brain's image of this construct in my mind.
Mm-hmm.
And when I realize that I'm feeling it, I get to own it, and then I get to realize it's not about the billionaire or about the person suffering or about. It's about what's going on in me. So now, if I resolve that, if I choose to forgive that, remove that energy, then whatever goes on in the world, whoever shows up, Bill or Mary, I'm the same. I am a conscious human being, the active presence of love. And like or dislike is all a structure of perception, has nothing to do with it. That's all about the mind of man.
Mm-hmm.
When I start showing up as who I am, rather than living in perception, I'm going to live in actuality. Rather than to bring the circle around from the beginning of our day today, rather than living in carbon-based memory, which has brain cells from all sorts of stuff that's never been resolved, rather than living in perception and the constructs of the mind that I think are actually pictures of what's going on out there rather than pictures painted on the inside of my eyeballs by carbon-based memory, I bring my being, active present love, to whatever's going on in the world. And there's no question of like or dislike. It's just the active presence of love. I show up as who I am. You know, a place that occurs to, you know, we mentioned earlier, this idea of death and befriending death. So, you know, let's imagine we have a friend who has had someone pass, and we're invited to their funeral. So I go to the funeral of this person who's passed, and my friend is there in pain and suffering and loss and trauma. They think about the death that's happened. They don't know it's about what's going on inside of them.
Mm-hmm.
If I go into the room with all of my unresolved pain and suffering around death, then we get to commiserate for together, and now we have sympathy. Sympathetic resonance. I have my pain, you have your pain. Let's live in it together and strengthen it. We'll all suffer together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or I can walk into the funeral home if I've done my work around death, and I'm simply the presence of active love. And now I become a space where my friend that has so much pain and suffering that they think is about this death that's occurred gets to resolve their pain and suffering. And I facilitate healing in that funeral home rather than bring my pain in to resonate your pain and now we all get to play in pain together.
But you wouldn't say, after all, we're all one. You wouldn't just clobber them with it.
Well, and if my perceptual mind formulates a reality that I've been clobbered with this. I might want to look back in my life to how it looks like my life to be clobbered. Like, when was my first memory of being clobbered? For most people, it's probably when they were 2 or 3 or 4. And that's another reality that plays out.
Mm-hmm.
If I don't have a reality of being clobbered and somebody says, in the middle of whatever is going on, well, we're all one, you know, then I might look at that and go, that's interesting. I think in the context of this situation and conversation, that's inappropriate, but yeah, so what? I don't bring clobbered to their statement because
that's
I've got pain about being clobbered.
Bingo. Okay.
And then all of a sudden, when I resolve that, and they say, well, after all, we're all one, I can think, well, that's inappropriate, but I'm still a space of active love for them and doesn't have anything to do with liking or disliking them. It's just I am the space.
Mm-hmm.
And being clobbered has been annihilated in me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, boy. Good.
Good breath. That's the kind that heals. That's the kind of breath you want more of, just spontaneously, just like that. That's what moves the energy. That's like the steam shovel scoop that goes inside of us and just scoops out that goop and throws it out. Forgiveness. What is baptism? You know, Yeshua, because it was a Jewish tradition, went to the river and got water poured on him. But you notice he never poured water on anybody. He never did baptism. What did he do?
No.
He said, I'm baptized for the forgiveness of sins. There is a symbolic gesture that was created. He never participated in it except to go along with the tradition for himself. But he never did it. He never participated in it. What did he do? He did Ruka Dikucha. He did breath. He baptized in the spirit, in the breath. Ruka Dikucha for the forgiveness of sins. Now we're down to literal physiology. What I hold my breath in the presence of, I reinforce and intensify more pain of it. When I take a breath and let my breath reach into the part of my structure where that trauma is stored, you know, down there in my left kneecap, and I breathe into it, that sin, literally, that energetic pattern of disintegrative energy in the kneecap, because I've reached my breath down into carbon-based memory that deeply and up lifted, brought out that pained sin, that energy, remember sin being off the mark, out of that tissue, and all of a sudden the kneecap heals and the sin has been forgiven. It's not about being forgiven, it's about the act of removing the energies that don't belong in the structure. That's the shift that needs to take place in the culture. You know, we have people going around with bumper stickers on the car, I've been forgiven. God is never going to forgive anybody for anything. But wait a minute, Michael, the scripture says only God can forgive. That's true. Well, Michael, now you're saying two opposite things out of your mouth. No, I'm not. God is never going to forgive anyone for anything because God is love and there's never been a judgment. But it is the energy of active present love. When allowed into the energy of darkness of what was called sin, when it's allowed in, that dissipates that energy. So it's not forgiven in the sense of being let off the hook, but it's forgiven in the sense of it is only that presence of love that can liberate that trauma, that sin energy. So it now becomes very real, like where we live on a daily basis. So nice breath.
Breathe.
Joining you in
firing.
It. Yeah.
What, Michael?
Sweet. That's what we're here for.
I know, you did it. That was amazing. You went all around Robin Hood's barn and didn't miss a... You followed me into the nooks and crannies. Thanks a lot. That was good.
Honored and delighted. And an appreciation to you for having built the brain cells and the commitment to keep going for it and to keep opening the refinements of it, because that's what it takes. So thank you for creating the space for it. It's appreciated.
Well, you are very welcome and deserved.
You are a major contribution to this work. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, dear heart.
You too.
Well,
thanks.
The show has
thanks
informed me that we're complete. And so I'll just say to everybody, thanks for joining us. Have the best year yet of your eternal life and blessings. Bye-bye.